Let me know when you're ready to sell the pinball machines. Where are you going to put them? Jack demanded. You've barely got room to turn around in that place over your mother's garage. For the classics, I'll toss out my bed and sleep on the floor.
Boys and their toys. Laurel rolled her eyes toward Del. You can't put yours in our bedroom. Line in the sand, Delaney. Indelible line.
I had a different location in mind.
Del glanced at Parker.
We'll talk about it.
All right. I thought you might want to convert one of the attics, Parker began. But I took a look myself, and I don't know that they'd safely hold all that weight. At least not if you wanted to keep the slate pool table.
I wasn't thinking up. I was thinking down.
Down? Parker repeated. Where? Oh, God, Del, not one of the basements.
How many attics and basements are in this place?
Mal whispered to Emma. Three attics, three basements if you count the scary boiler room where the demons who eat the flesh of young girls live.
Cool.
Sure, if you're a young boy like Del was. Emma narrowed her dark eyes as she glared across the table. But if you're a young girl playing treasure hunt, you could be scarred for life by a certain mean boy with a flashlight with a red bulb, a shambling walk, and a low, maniacal laugh. She picked up her wine, shuddered a little. I still can't go down there. He tuned back in while Parker and Del batted basements around. Laurel sat smiling into her wine. Jack grabbed another roll, and Mac whispered something in Carter's ear that made the tip of that ear flush pink. Interesting.
Look, Del said. You use the West Wing basement to store event supplies, extra tables, chairs, whatever.
We're buying more, investing in our own, Parker pointed out. So we snag the rental rather than subbing it out.
Which is good business. I've been down there too many times to count when I've pitched in with events. You have enough space for a showroom.
It's not the space, Del. You can have the space. Obviously weighing options, Parker frowned at her water glass, then at Del. We could move the storage to the east side, but even then... No, no! Emma waved both hands. It's too close to the Hellmouth.
And he's still there,
Del said darkly.
Waiting for you.
I hate you, Delaney. Beat him up, Jack, Emma demanded. A whole lot.
Okay, can I finish this roll first?
East, west, Parker interrupted. It's still a basement. There's next to no natural lighting. The ceilings are barely 7 feet. Concrete floors, parged walls, pipes everywhere.
All the better for a man cave. Besides, why do you think I keep him around?
He gestured at Jack.
He's more than a pretty face. Take a cavernous basement and remodel it into an MEA? That's manly entertainment area to you civilians,
Jack explained as interest lit in his smoky eyes.
I can do that. The walls are 1 foot thick,
Del went on.
So the space could be used even during events and nobody'd hear a thing.
He lifted his wine glass, swirled the last half-inch of wine while he aimed his gaze at Emma.
Just like nobody hears the pitiful screams of girls being eaten alive by the demon with a single red eye.
You bastard. Emma hunched her shoulders.
Let's go take a look.
Parker stared at Del.
Now?
Sure.
I'm not going down there, Emma muttered.
Aw, baby.
Jack leaned over to wrap an arm around Emma.
I'll protect you.
She shook her head at Jack. You say that now. You guys go ahead. Mac waved her wine glass. Carter and I are just going to finish our wine. Then we have some things to do at home. There's peach pie yet, Mrs. Grady announced. Well, Mac smiled. We have dessert at home, don't we, Carter? His ears blushed again.
Apparently. Come on, Mal,
Del invited.
We'll give you a tour of the depths. Work up an appetite for pie.
Sure.
He rose after they did, reached for his plate to clear it. Leave that for now. Mrs. Grady wagged a finger at him. Go on and explore first.
Okay. Best ham I ever ate.
I'll wrap some up for you to take home. He bent down as he passed her.
I owe you a dance,
he whispered in her ear and made her laugh. What was that about? Parker asked him.
Private conversation.
He tagged along, taking back stairs he imagined had once seen the scurry of servants and wondering why Parker still wore those skinny heels. As Dell hit switches, hard fluorescent lights flickered on to reveal a massive labyrinth. He noted the low ceilings, unfinished walls, exposed pipes, and, as they turned into an open area, the utilitarian shelving, stacks of tables, chairs, stools. A basement, no doubt, with just a pleasing edge of creepy, and as ruthlessly clean as the kitchen of a 5-star restaurant.
What, do you have basement gnomes that come out and scrub at night?
Just because it's storage and utility doesn't mean it shouldn't be clean, Parker answered. Dell, it's depressing down here.
Now?
He moved into a passageway, ducked under more pipes with what Mal assumed was the grace of experience, and kept winding.
Old boiler room.
Dell jerked a thumb at a locked wooden door.
Where demons drool and sharpen their fangs on the bones of...
I didn't fall for that when I was 8, Laurel reminded him.
It's a damn shame.
He slung his arm around her shoulders. She wound hers around his waist. Malcolm adjusted his stride so he walked beside Parker.
It's a lot of space.
It's had a few incarnations and various uses. Storage and utility, just as now. And my great-grandfather had a workshop down here. He liked to build things, and so it's told he liked to have a quiet space to retreat when my great-grandmother was on a tear. They stored preserves and root vegetables, whatever else they canned during harvests. My father said his parents outfitted it as an air raid shelter during the 50s. As the space widened again, she stopped, put her hands on her hips. God, Dell, it's creepy. It's like a catacomb.
I like it.
Jack circled, eyes narrowed.
Take out that wall, widen the opening. Beams, columns. That brings in one more window, a little more light.
You call that sliver a window? Laurel asked.
Lighting's a priority, and we have ways.
Jack looked up.
We'd have to reroute some of the pipes, give you more headroom. Space isn't an issue, so I'd fur out the walls, run the electric, more plumbing. Put a nice john over there, balance that with a closet over here. Me, I'd put in a gas fireplace. Heat and ambiance. Maybe do some stone or brick on that wall. Tile the floor, put heat elements under the tile. You've got your storm cellar doors out there. I want to think about that, take measurements, but it's doable. Oh, yeah, it's doable.
Dell glanced at Parker, cocked an eyebrow. If it's what you want, of course, I'm fine with it.
There's your green light, Cook.
Jack rubbed his hands together.
Yeah, baby.
They're going to start talking about bearing walls and rough plumbing. Laurel shook her head. I'm going up. I've barely cleared the brain haze from the construction of my auxiliary kitchen, which is the work of genius, she added to Jack.
We do no less.
I'll go with you. Parker started out with Laurel, stopped. Jack, can we do heated floors in the storage area?
All that, my lovely, and more.
She smiled. Maybe we'll talk. By the time Malcolm came back up, and damn if Jack hadn't made him see a space as slick, maybe even slicker than the testosterone paradise in Dell's current house, Mrs. Grady, Emma, Laurel, and Parker had made a serious dent in the clearing up. He took Mrs. Grady's hand, shaking his head.
Uh-uh, you sit.
He gestured to the bench in the breakfast nook.
The one who cooks doesn't clean up. That's the law of Kavanaugh.
I always liked your mother.
I'm pretty fond of her myself. Want some more wine?
I've had my share, but I wouldn't mind a cup of tea.
You got it.
He walked back to the stove, shook the kettle, then bumped Parker out of the way to fill it from the tap. He answered her stare with one of his own.
Problem?
No.
Your hair smells like this white flower that bloomed all over this bush I had under my bedroom window when we were stationed in Florida. It gets its hooks right in me.
He set the kettle on the burner, turned it on. The other men walked in as he took a stack of dishes from Emma.
Damn,
Dell complained.
We didn't stay down there long enough.
You can grab what's left on the table, Laurel told them. We're short-handed as Mac and Carter ducked out to have dessert at home, which is spelled S-E-X.
If they'd waited an hour, they could have had pie and sex.
Malcolm found a cup and saucer in a cupboard.
It doesn't get any better than that.
And, he discovered in short order, it was damn good pie. He gauged his timing before he pushed back from the table.
Del and Jack huddled over designs Jack sketched on a legal pad someone had dug up, and Laurel talked recipes with Mrs. Grady.
I've got to take off. Thanks, Mrs. Grady.
Poker night,
Del said, glancing up.
Bring cash.
Sure, since I'll be leaving with yours.
You give my best to your mother. Parker. Mrs. Grady tapped a finger on the table. Get Malcolm the leftovers I put aside for him.
Even better, Malcolm thought,
and flashed Mrs. Grady a grin when she winked at him. He trailed Parker into the kitchen.
Looks like I'll be eating like a king tomorrow, too.
He tucked the container under his arm.
Mrs. G has a weakness for strays. I didn't mean it like that, she said quickly.
I didn't take it like that.
I'm really grateful for your help tonight. You saved me a lot of time and aggravation. I'll walk you out.
She'd pulled out that formal tone, he noted, the one that clearly ordered a man to take a step back. He moved deliberately closer as they walked through the house.
Can you give me an estimate on when I can pick up my car?
All business now, Malcolm mused.
I'll call you about the tires in the morning and work that out with you. Since I've got it in, I can give it a once over.
I was going to schedule a general maintenance next month, but yes, since it's already there.
You been having any problems with it?
No, none.
That should make it easy.
She reached for the door. He beat her to it.
Thanks again. I'll expect your mother's call tomorrow.
Brisk and dry as a handshake, he thought. He set the container down on a table holding a vase of fat orange roses. Sometimes, he thought, you moved fast. Sometimes you moved slow. He moved fast, giving her a quick yank that had her body colliding with his. The way she said, "Excuse me," like a veteran schoolteacher to an unruly student, made him grin before he took her mouth with his. It was even better than the pie. Soft, tasty, ripe, with just a hint of shock to cut the sweet. He felt her fingers dig into his shoulders, and the light tremble might have been outrage, might have been pleasure. He'd tasted her before. Once when she'd grabbed him and planted one on him to take a slap at Del, and again when he'd followed his own instincts on a visit to their place in the Hamptons. And every taste made him want more. A lot more. He didn't bother to be gentle. He imagined she'd had plenty of the smooth type, the polite type, and he wasn't inclined to be either. So he pleased himself, letting his hands run up that truly exceptional body of hers, then down again, enjoying her slow melt against him. When he heard the low purr in her throat, when he tasted it on his tongue, he let her go. He stepped back, picked up the container of leftovers. He smiled at her. It was the first time he'd seen her stunned and speechless.
See you later, Legs.
He strolled out, strapped the container onto his bike. When he swung on, revved the engine, he glanced back to see her standing in the open doorway. She made a hell of a picture, he thought, framed there in her power suit, just a little bit mussed, with the big gorgeous house around her. He tapped his helmet in salute, then roared away with that picture as clear in his head as the taste of her on his tongue. Parker stepped back, shut the door, then turned and jumped when she saw Laurel in the hallway.
Can I just say, wow?
Parker shook her head, wished she had something to do with her hands. He just grabbed me.
I'll say, and let's have one more wow.
He's grabby and pushy and really, really hot. And I say that as a woman madly in love with your brother.
I might also add, she continued as she walked to Parker, that as I didn't politely avert my eyes and go away, I happened to observe you weren't exactly fighting him off.
He caught me by surprise. Besides, I wouldn't give him the satisfaction.
Sorry, but he looked pretty satisfied. And Parker?
She gave her friend's arm a pat.
You look flustered, glowy, and dazzled.
I am not glowy.
Laurel simply turned Parker by the shoulders to the big foyer mirror.
You were saying?
Maybe color did glow in her cheeks, and maybe her eyes were a little dazzled, but...
That's irritation.
I won't say liar, liar, but Parks, under that skirt, your pants are on fire. All right, fine. Fine. He's a good kisser if you like the rough, arrogant style.
You seemed good with it.
That was only because he ambushed me, and this is a stupid conversation about nothing. I'm going up.
Me too, which is why I got an eyeful of the nothing.
They started up together, but before they separated, Parker stopped on the landing. I was wearing the back-off cloak.
What?
I'm not stupid. He made a little move in the kitchen. Actually, he makes little moves every time I run into him, which is disconcerting, but I can handle it. So when I walked him to the door, I thought he might get ideas.
Laurel's eyes widened. You swirled on the back-off cloak? The famed shield that repels men of all ages, creeds, and political affiliations?
Yes.
Yet he was not repelled.
He's immune.
She gave Parker a slap on the arm.
He may be the only creature of his kind.
It's not funny.
Sure it is.
Also sexy.
I'm not interested in funny and sexy with Malcolm Cavanaugh.
Parker, if you weren't interested on some level, you'd have flicked him off like lint on a lapel.
He...
Laurel searched for the right word.
He intrigues you.
No, he...
Maybe.
As your friend, let me say it's nice to see you intrigued by a man, especially since I like the man and have noted he is also intrigued by you.
Parker jerked a shoulder. He just wants to get me in bed.
Well, of course he wants to get you in bed, but I'm not at all convinced it's just.
I'm not going to have sex with him. We have a business relationship.
Because he's your mechanic?
He's Val's mechanic now, and he's Del's friend.
Parks, your excuses are so lame they're limping, which makes me think you're worried you want to have sex with him.
It's not about sex. Everything's not always about sex.
You brought it up.
Caught, Parker admitted. Now I'm bringing it down. I've got too much on my mind to think about this anyway. We're jammed tomorrow. We're jammed for the next 5 days straight.
We are. Do you want me to come up? Hang out a while?
The fact that she did, really did, only confirmed to Parker she was making too much out of nothing. No thanks, I'm good. And I've got a little work I want to get in before bed. I'll see you in the morning.
She walked up alone and switched on the TV for company. After slipping out of her shoes, she checked them for any dings, scrapes, or scratches. Satisfied, she set them in their proper place on the shoe wall of her closet. She dropped her suit in the dry-cleaning bag, replaced her jewelry in the slots designed for them in the thin drawers. She slipped on a nightshirt, a robe, tucked her phone in the robe pocket. She considered a long, hot bath, but X'd it out, since long, hot baths encouraged thinking and dreaming. She didn't care to do either. Instead, she fixed her mind on the next day's schedule while she cleansed, toned, moisturized her face. Glowy, she thought, giving her reflection a cool stare. What a silly word. It wasn't even a word in the first place, and totally inaccurate. Laurel had romance fever. Nearly all brides caught it, and due to its side effects, they saw everything and everyone through a pretty haze of love. Nice for them, she admitted as she took the first band from her hair. Good business for vows. And speaking of business, she'd take an hour now to input all the new data from the evening consult and the initial choices made by the clients. An estimated 225 on the guest list, she thought as she wandered back into the bedroom with the intention of going to work on her laptop in her sitting room. A bridal party of six, including a flower girl who'd be five by the June wedding. The bride's favorite flower was peony, her color choices, for now anyway, pink and green, soft tones. Soft, Parker thought again, and changed direction to open her terrace doors and step out. She'd just get a little air first, just take in a little of the night air. The bride wanted soft and delicate. She'd asked Parker to meet her at the salon to view the gown she'd chosen, which proved she was a bride who understood that the wedding dress created the center of whatever tone or theme or mood the wedding took. All those lovely floaty layers, Parker recalled, the subtle gleam of seed pearls and tender touches of lace. Pastels and peonies, shimmering tulle, and whispered promises. She could see it. She would see to it. She excelled at seeing to things. There was no reason, no good reason to feel so restless, so unsettled,
So addled. No reason to stand here looking out at night-drenched gardens, remembering the unexpected thrill of a motorcycle ride that had lasted only minutes, and had been fast and dangerous and foolishly exciting. Like, very like, the hard, rough kiss of a brash man in her own foyer. She wasn't interested in those things. Absolutely not. Intrigued, maybe, but intrigued was a different matter. She found sharks intriguing when they swam their eerily silent way in the tank at an aquarium, but that didn't mean she had any interest in taking a dip with them. Which wasn't a fair comparison, she admitted with a sigh. Not fair at all. Malcolm might be cocky, he might be brash, but he wasn't a shark. He'd been so natural with Mrs. G, and even a bit sweet in that area. She had an unerring radar for phonies when it came to their behavior with those she loved, and there hadn't been a phony note in Malcolm's. Then there was his friendship with Dell. Dell might tolerate professional relationships with phonies and sharks, but never a personal one. So the problem, if there was a problem, was obviously with her. She'd just have to correct it. Correcting, solving, and eliminating problems was her stock in trade. She'd just figure out the solution to this one, implement it, then move on. She needed to ascertain and identify said problem first, but she had a pretty good idea of its root. At some level of the intrigue, not interest, but intrigue, at some level of that level, she was attracted. In an elemental, strictly chemical way. She was human, she was healthy, and Laurel was right. Malcolm was hot, in his primal, rough-edged manner. Motorcycles and leather, torn denim and cocky grins. Hard hands, a hungry mouth. Parker pressed a hand to her belly. Yes, definitely an aspect of attraction. Now that she'd admitted it, she could work out the best way to defuse it. Like a bomb. Like the bomb that had gone off inside her when he'd yanked her. Yanked her, she thought again. She didn't like being yanked. Did she? Doesn't matter, she mumbled. You fixed problems with answers, not more questions. She wished she didn't have so many damn questions. In her pocket, her phone rang. She plucked it out like a woman reaching for a float in a stormy sea. Thank God. She breathed out relief. Crazy Bride would absolutely, no question, give her a problem she could efficiently solve and keep her mind off her own. Hi, Sabina. What can I do for you? Chapter 4 Parker prepped for the morning staff meeting with BlackBerry and laptop. She sat at the large round table in what had been the library of her home and now served as Val's conference room. The walls of books and the rich scent of leather remained, and on brisk fall or cold winter mornings, a fire would snap away in the hearth, as it had for as long as she could remember. Lamps that warmed cozy seating arrangements had belonged to her grandmother. The rugs, a bit faded and frayed with time and use, came down from a generation before that. Framed articles on vows and the women behind it were displayed artfully on the walls between cabinets. On the long table nearby, her mother's silver coffee service gleamed, and under it, tucked behind the antique doors, sat an office-sized refrigerator stocked with water and soft drinks. To her mind, the room epitomized the blending of tradition and enterprise essential to her goals for herself and her business. She checked the day's agenda, including the morning appointments, the afternoon's bridal shower, and the rehearsal for Friday evening's event. Her phone signaled as Mac came in with a basket of muffins.
Laurel's on her way. Emma says she's not late.
Parker nodded.
Friday night's bride.
Good morning, Cecily. Ready for the big day?
She nodded again as Mac held the coffee pot over Parker's cup.
Mm-hmm. That's so sweet. Yes, we can do that. Oh, absolutely.
She listened, winced only a little.
I think that's incredibly generous of you and Marcus. I know you must be, she responded. Listen, I'm just thinking, just throwing this out there. I wonder if considering the wedding cake and the groom's cake, another cake might be overkill. Not quite as special as you'd like. What about a cupcake? Heart-shaped, elaborately frosted with their names on it. It would fit right on the head table in front of them, be exclusively theirs.
Listening again, Parker began to key in data one-handed on her laptop.
Leave it to me. You know Laurel will make it beautiful and very special.
Parker just beamed out a smile as Laurel came in and narrowed her eyes at the statement.
What's your sister's favorite flower?
Parker asked.
Dahlia's lovely.
Oh, of course he can if he wants to. I'll be available for that if he can get here just a few minutes early tonight.
Yes, we're excited too. Not a word, I promise. See you tonight.
What am I making beautiful and special? Laurel demanded.
A cupcake. One single cupcake.
Parker held up one finger.
Heart-shaped, maybe a little oversized, just for impact. Maybe iced with dahlias as the design and with the names Griff and JC, Friday night's groom's brother and the bride's sister, also the BM and MOH. They've been dating about 6 months now. He's going to propose at the wedding as a crescendo to his toast to the bride and groom.
Why would he want to do that?
Mac demanded.
I don't know, because he's crazy from love, because he wants to tie the way he feels about her to the way his brother feels about his sister. He asked his brother and the bride first, and they love it. They're weeping with joy, and,
she added with a steely look at Laurel,
she wanted another cake. I talked her down to a cupcake, so you owe me.
What'd I miss?
Emma rushed in.
I'm not late.
You're late, Mac corrected.
And love is in the air, is what you missed.
Oh, well, that's all over the place around here anyway. New business, just so Emma's up to date.
Parker ran through the phone call and resulting additions. As she expected, Emma went dewy-eyed.
That's adorable.
It won't be if she says hell no, Laurel pointed out.
She won't.
But Emma looked stricken.
Oh, God, what if?
Let's take a good look at the two of them tonight, Parker suggested. See what sense we get. If we think oops, we'll come up with a plan to cover. Next, today's afternoon event. Bridal shower with guests arriving at 2.
Champagne elegance, Laurel said.
That's the name of the cake, as that's what the very snooty MOH and bridal shower hostess demanded as ambiance. We have a small-scale wedding cake with champagne accents, a variety of cookies, mini pastries, chocolates. The caterer is providing the girly food, the champagne, and the coffee and tea. Party favors include chocolates in glossy white boxes with monogrammed silver ribbons accented with a sparkly hair clip.
I've done white roses, as requested.
Emma gulped coffee.
Individual contemporary bouquets and black vases for each table. Tink's finishing up the arbor and pergola as we speak. We'll do white rose displays in the portico urns and on the terraces.
The guests have been requested to wear white, Parker reminded her partners.
We're to wear black, as are all the subs and the string trio who'll play during the mingling and nibbling portions of the event. The forecast is for mostly sunny, light winds, and a high of 71, so we should be able to hold the event outside as we hoped. Gift table will be under the pergola. At 3, we'll set up the bride's chair, and at 3:15, begin the opening of gifts. I'll be keeping the record of who gave what for the bride. By 4:15, we should be able to transfer the gifts to the limo. By 4:45, we wave goodbye. Mac?
The MOH wants candids, by which she actually means carefully posed shots where everyone, especially her, looks fabulous and happy and natural and 10 pounds lighter. She wants a shot of the bride with every gift and with every guest.
No problem on my end. The Mason Easter Bay wedding party should arrive at 5:30 for rehearsal. They have reservations at Carlotta's for 7:30, so they need to be out and gone by 7. Any problem there?
When she got negatives, Parker moved on. Any questions, problems, comments, sarcastic remarks about their actual event?
If I'd known there was a sarcastic remark slot, I'd have had one ready, Laurel told her.
Otherwise, today, I may need to have somebody drive me into the garage to get my car, or I'll take a cab if everyone's busy. Mrs. Cavanaugh's calling me this morning and hopefully can give me a time frame. I do have an appointment here at 10. She waited a bit. With Carter's sister, Diane.
What about?
Mac wondered. About her being a bitch? Sorry, I shouldn't call your soon-to-be sister-in-law a bitch. To your face.
No problem, she is kind of a bitch. The passive-aggressive type that makes me want to boot her in the ass, often.
The sky's never blue enough for Diane,
Emma commented. Her family and the Maguires had been friends for years.
What's she being a bitch about? Laurel asked.
She's upset Sherry. Didn't want to be in the wedding because it's too much fuss, too much trouble.
She's been snarky about the wedding right along.
Mac nodded, shrugged.
She's given me some nudges about it, and about mine. Who wants that in their wedding party, sister or not? Now she's saying she won't come to the rehearsal dinner. Not in the wedding party, doesn't want to get a sitter, doesn't want to come with the kids and deal with them. Me, I'd say fine, don't, but Sherry wants her there. Parker's eyes glittered. So she'll be there. Kick her ass, champ. Parker smiled at Laurel. Count on it. Once I've done that, I'll be available to pitch in with anything for anyone until it's time to get my car. Maybe you'll get more smoochies, Laurel. What? Do you think I'm keeping that to myself? She grinned as both Mac and Emma demanded details. Malcolm Cavanaugh in the foyer with a hot embrace.
Well, well.
Mac wiggled her eyebrows. There's no well, well about it. Wanting to move on, Parker pulled out her casually dismissive tone. He was just showing off. He's good at it, Laurel put in. I got singed by the heat and I was 15 feet away.
Are you going out? Emma asked her.
If you mean am I going out at some point to pick up my car, yes.
Come on, are you going to see him? A date?
Emma qualified. No, it was just a... He was being a smartass, that's it.
You kissed him first.
Emma wagged her finger.
4th of July.
I was mad at Dell, and it was a mistake. And that doesn't mean... She broke off and grabbed her ringing phone.
Saved by the crackberry, Mac announced.
Hi, Buffy. Taking advantage, Parker pushed up, walked out of the room as she spoke.
They've got the hots, the mutual hots.
Laurel folded her arms. I am not mistaken on this.
He looks at her. Don't give me that smirk.
Emma pointed at Mac.
He looks at her a lot, and she tries not to look at him. I say mutual hots are definite.
He's got that whole James Dean thing going on.
The sausage guy?
Mac asked, frowning at Laurel. No, Jesus, Mackenzie. Laurel aimed her gaze at the heavens. That's Jimmy Dean. James, bad boy, all attitude.
I kind of like that he rattles her, Emma decided. Our Parker isn't easily rattled, which is one of the aspects that makes her our Parker, but I kind of like seeing it.
He's not slick, which earns him points from me. Laurel shrugged, rose. We'll see where it goes, if anywhere. Meanwhile, duty calls. She paused at the doorway. Hey, you know what Parker said after that smoking hot kiss?
What?
Mac demanded.
Absolutely nothing.
Parker might not have thought of anything to say then, but she had plenty to say to Carter's older sister. She greeted Diane at the door herself, extending both hands and a beaming smile. Di, it's so good to see you. Thanks so much for making time today. How are the kids? She added as she drew Diane inside.
They're fine.
Mac tells me they got a puppy recently. Deliberately, she draped an arm over Diane's shoulders, just a couple of girl pals catching up, to lead her into the parlor. My father managed to get around me there. Of course, he's not the one dealing with it. Isn't that always the way? Parker said cheerfully. I know an excellent trainer if you're interested in a little help. She's wonderful and has kid-puppy classes, so the kids get involved in the work. How about some coffee? I'm cutting back on caffeine. Oh, I drink far too much of it myself. We've got some lovely green tea. Carter says it's your favorite. With a quick hitch in her stride, Diane stared, blinked. Carter did? It's surprising, isn't it, what our brothers notice and remember? Let's sit down. You look just terrific, Diane. What have you been doing? Obviously flustered, Diane pushed back at her bob of brown hair. An attractive woman, she habitually marred her looks with a dissatisfied expression. I joined a yoga class a couple months ago, but it's so full of nonsense that Oh, I love yoga. All smiles, Parker poured the tea. It was no accident she used one of her grandmother's best Dalton tea services. Diane, she knew, noted and set store by such things. Even a 15-minute session helps me release all the stress of the day. Good for you for taking a little me time. With your work, your family, all those obligations, you have to fit 25 hours into every day. I honestly don't know how you do it, and here I've added to those hours by asking you to come talk to me. I assume it's about Sherry's wedding, and I don't really understand what that has to do with me. Can you believe it's almost here? Undeterred, Parker sipped her tea. And before we know it, it'll be Carter and Mac.
She reached out to take Diane's hand again. It makes us family, and that's what sparked this idea I have.
What idea?
I should start at the beginning, and the credit for that goes to Mac. You know that Sherry's main wish for the wedding was fun. She wants it to be a fun day, friends and family, a celebration. I have to tell you, Di, so many brides are focused on the tiny details, the minutiae. And of course, that's what we do here, it's part of what we offer. But it's so refreshing to work with your sister, a woman who sees the big picture. She sees, well, your parents and you.
Me?
You and Sam and your children, what you've built. The life, the family, the continuity. It isn't an easy thing, that build, as you know. And she sees what you've accomplished. And all that starts with the wedding itself, the celebration of those first steps. You're her big sister. You took the steps before her, and you've helped show her the way. You've been a huge influence on her.
Diane sniffed. Sherry never listens to anything I have to say.
You know, I think those who have impact and influence over us are often unaware. Why, just the other day...
She broke off, gave a little shake of her head.
I don't want to betray a confidence, but since it's family, Sherry told me just the other day how important you are to her, how much you mean to her. I guess it's easier to say that to someone just a little outside, isn't it?
Again, the stare, the blink. She said that?
Yes, and it made me realize I'm ahead of myself again. With an easy laugh, Parker waved a hand as if she'd scattered her thoughts. Mac's idea. She's put together photographs of Sherry, of your family, Nick and his family. Old photos, recent ones, a kind of chronological retrospective. Mac's so talented. I know I'm biased, but I have to say the CD she created is wonderful. Sweet, funny, charming, poignant. The idea is to run it at the rehearsal dinner.
Oh, I'm not going to...
What it's missing, Parker interrupted, is a narrator. An MC, if you will, someone who's been there from the beginning. Not your parents, as it's a surprise for them, too, and Mac added their wedding photo to kick the whole thing off. I thought Carter, as he's a teacher as well as her brother, so he's used to speaking in public, but when Sherry and I talked, I realized, no, it's a sister thing. A big sister thing. After all, who has a more unique, clever, intimate perspective on Sherry... On your family, on Nick and his, then you, please say you'll do it. Again, Parker reached out a hand, making that contact, making it personal. I know it's a lot to ask, and it's such short notice, but it's all just coming together. We really need you.
You want me to narrate pictures?
Not just want, but need. And not just pictures. It's a journey, Diane. Sherry and Nick's, yes, but also all of you. Family's so essential to both of them. I've gotten to know them and understand that over these past months. It's going to be the highlight of the evening. Carter's drafted out the script, and he's hoping you'll say yes and work with him on refining it.
Carter wants me to...
She broke off, obviously stunned. Oh, I know you're incredibly busy already, and it's a lot to ask, but I'll help as much as I can, as much as you want or need. Frankly, I don't think you'll need any help. Anyone who can manage a family the way you do can, in my opinion, manage anything.
I might be able to do it, but I'd have to see the CD and whatever Carter's written before I could commit.
Parker whisked a file off the table. I happen to have a copy of both right here. The CD runs just about 12 minutes. Have you got time to watch it now?
I guess.
Perfect. I'll just get my laptop. 26 minutes later, Parker wheeled the tea trolley back in the kitchen.
I see by the canary feathers stuck to your lip that you pulled it off.
Mrs. Grady set the basket of cherry tomatoes just harvested from her kitchen garden on the counter. I troweled it on pretty thick, then I shoveled on more. She'll not only attend the rehearsal and the rehearsal dinner, but she'll MC Mac and Carter's CD. And bless Carter for being willing to step out as MC, especially since it was as much his idea as Mac's.
He's a good boy. And his older sister's always been a pain in the rear.
Well, she's attractive, but she lacks Sherry's vivacity and easy confidence. She's smart, but not as innately bright as Carter, and not anywhere near as sweet. She's the firstborn, but not, I think, often first otherwise. And it irks. All I had to do was make it as much about her as Sherry. Parker shrugged. And tell her a few truths. Her family loves her, she's important to them.
Some people just have to hear it, a lot. I bet it didn't hurt it came from you. Parker Brown needs my help.
Parker shrugged again. Whatever works. The bride gets what she wants and deserves. She glanced at her watch. And I'm on schedule. She pitched in on decor for the event, checked on Laurel's progress, spoke with the caterers on their arrival, the parking attendants at theirs. She stepped out on the terrace for a last check as Mac took shots of the setup and thought, champagne elegance all around. Not her particular taste for a wedding shower, and since she had 3 in planning stages for her friends, she had plenty of ideas. But the scene had an appealingly stylish deco feel, with just enough lush from Emma's stunning arrangements to soften it.
Totally Gatsby, Mac said as she lowered her camera.
I was just thinking that. I'd say the hostess and the bride will be very pleased.
You've already scored today. Carter sent me a text. His sister wants to meet him after his classes today and talk about the script for the rehearsal dinner. Nice job.
I think she'll do one, too, I really do. She was excited about the whole thing when she left.
Diane, excited? Did you spike her tea?
In a manner of speaking, but it was the CD itself that did it. She got misty a few times.
Mac's eyebrows winged up. I underestimate my own power. Everything a go inside?
Emma was just finishing the public areas, and Laurel's done and with the caterer. I'm about to... She laid a finger on her headset. Be right there. Our hostess just arrived, she told Mac. I'll go meet her, bring her through.
I'll go around, get some unobtrusive shots of arrivals.
With a nod, Parker started inside. Em, Laurel, she said into her headset. We're green. Within the hour, Parker watched women in stylish white suits, floaty white dresses, sharply tailored white pants, mingle on the terrace. They sipped champagne, chatted, laughed, nibbled on pretty past hors d'oeuvres. Mac moved among them, capturing moments. The burst of delight as the bride-to-be threw back her head and laughed. The affectionate hug of greeting between friends. The sweetness of a granddaughter tapping flutes with her grandmother. It pleased her, as it always did, to see happiness here, to feel it sparkling in the air like champagne, to know what had come to her could be a setting for joy. Today it pleased her to be in the company of women, and to have played a part in creating this individualized vision of the female ritual. At the appointed time, she moved forward to ask the guests to be seated for lunch, then again retreated to the background, then braced when the hostess made her way over, her face set in harassed lines.
Olivia asked about games. She wants shower games.
Which you expressly vetoed, Parker remembered, but smiled. I can take care of that.
She asked about games and prizes. Obviously, I haven't prepared for...
It's not a problem. I'll see to it during lunch. How about 3? I find that's just enough. Fun and simple games with pretty prizes for the winners.
I don't want to hand out anything tacky or foolish. I'd want something in keeping with the ambiance.
And gee, Parker thought, I was going to get the glow-in-the-dark dildos. Absolutely. Leave it to me. We'll have it all arranged for after lunch. Please, go enjoy yourself. Don't worry about a thing. She waited until she'd slipped inside. Laurel, I need you to take over outside, she said into her headset. The BTB wants games and prizes. I need 15 minutes to set it up.
Got it.
Emma, I need a small prize table set up.
Oh, for God's sake.
I know, I know. Whatever you can do, you've got 40 minutes. She charged up the back steps, all the way to the gift room, a space designed for gift wrapping, present storage. Inside one of the cabinets, she had labeled pre-wrapped gifts. She scanned, debated, and after choosing 3, slipped them into white embossed gift bags, tucked in black tissue. From another cabinet, she grabbed a stack of notepads, pencils, pulled other supplies. She dashed back down, set the bags and the box of supplies on the dining room table, then zipped through the kitchen and into the old butler's pantry to choose the proper tray for the display.
"What are you after?"
Mrs. Grady asked from behind her. The BTB wants games, which the hostess vetoed during the planning stages. I don't think white bags on a white tray, and we don't have an appropriate black one. I think silver. Or glass, maybe glass.
Try both.
Good idea. Can you come? Give me an opinion. Mrs. Grady walked along with her.
Oh, your car's back.
Back where?
Here.
Parker stopped, frowned. My car's here?
Delivered about 20 minutes ago, washed and waxed, too. I put the bill up on your desk.
Oh, but I didn't ask him to deliver it. I was going to...
Save you time, doesn't it?
Which, in Mrs. Grady's opinion, made Malcolm Cavanaugh a very shrewd customer. Parker said nothing, only continued to frown as she arranged the bags on the silver tray. I think the glass one's better. The silver makes too much of a statement, and Emma could sprinkle some white rose petals on the glass, and with a little black vases. Who delivered the car?
Mrs. Grady smothered a smile. Didn't catch his name. Well, theirs, as the one had another following him in a tow truck.
Oh. The glass?
I'd say it's classy, but more subtle than the silver.
Yes, that's what I'm after. She stepped back. I'll leave this here, go see if I can help Emma set up the table.
She started out.
Really, I could have picked up the car.
No doubt. What do you say when someone does you a favor?
Parker heaved out a breath at the implied tsk in the tone. You say thank you. I will, when I get a chance. She didn't have one, or so she told herself. The event required her focus, and, with the additional time for the unscheduled games, ran about 30 minutes over, which cut back on the time to prep for the evening's rehearsal.
The games were a hit, Matt commented.
They generally are.
Nice prizes. I really liked the travel jewelry caddy, the green leather. Somebody who's going to Tuscany for her honeymoon could really use one of them.
Maybe somebody'll get lucky. Parker chugged from a bottle of water. We seriously pulled that off, and our hostess didn't bat an eye at the additional invoice for the prizes, especially since I gave her the extra half hour on the house. She took a last scan of the terrace. They'd broken down all the tables, but had left the pergola and urns dressed. They had only to set up the refreshment table, and they were good to go. She probably had 5 minutes now to call in her thanks, but really she had to check the invoice first. For all she knew, he'd gouged her on a delivery charge.
I'm just going to...
Her phone rang.
God, crazy bride.
Better you than me. Go ahead, we've got this.
Crazy bride ate up her time, and gave her space to think. She'd send a thank you note with the check for the service and tires. That was, Parker decided as she ran the rehearsal, appropriate. With 5 minutes to go, she said, the groom's brother and best man will escort their mother to her seat, with her husband following. That's perfect. The best man will join the groom, standing to the groom's left, and at 3 minutes to go, the bride's brother will escort their mom to her seat. Brother moves up to the left of best man, right of George. Angle just a little, Sam. Exactly. Music change for the bridal procession. Wendy, Nikki, Addie, and I'll be there to cue you tomorrow. Remember to smile, ladies. Then JC, the maid of honor. Good. And when she's halfway down, it's time for the ring-bearer. That's the way, Kevin. The 5-year-old strutted down to laughter and applause. And the flower girl? Really good, Jenny, and tomorrow there'll be real flowers in your basket. Kevin on the boy's side, Jenny on the girl's. You stand right there with your daddy, Kevin. Then... She trailed off, blank as she looked back and saw Malcolm leaning on one of the urns, a bouquet in his hand. She couldn't see his eyes, not with the sun slanting off the dark glasses he wore, but she could see his grin clearly enough.
Then? The groom prompted with a laugh. Do I get married?
Almost. Music change, everyone stands, and the bride begins her walk, escorted by her father. And, she said to the groom, she's the most beautiful woman in the world. She's everything you've ever wanted, and she's about to be yours. She waited. Stop here, and as you requested, your mom will step over with you and your dad. The minister will ask who gives this woman and your line, Mr. Falcone?
Her mother and I.
They kissed their daughter, then took her hand and placed it in the groom's. Lovely. Now. She ran them through the ceremony, hitting the highlights, outlining the timing and choreography. He'll say you may kiss your bride.
I got that part.
The groom spun his bride, dipped her while she laughed, and bent to give her a lavish kiss. Cecily, if you get cold feet tomorrow, I'm happy to stand in for you. The bride laughed again, twinkling at Parker.
My feet are really, really warm, but thanks.
I bet. At that point, you'll face your friends and family. The minister will introduce you for the first time as husband and wife,
and those of us not still swooning over that kiss will applaud. Music changes to recessional, and you walk down the aisle. Mac will take you from there. From here, the rest of the wedding party recesses in reverse order, flower girl and ring bearer first. Good, she thought, very good. If everyone smiled and beamed like this tomorrow, they'd hardly need the sun. After the wedding party, the parents and grandparents of the bride, then the grooms. Mac will also need all of you for wedding pictures. The guests will be escorted inside the solarium for canapes and drinks to keep them happy during the photo session. She ignored the itch at the back of her neck. She knew he was staring at her as she outlined the timing and procedure for introductions, dinner, toasts, the shift to the ballroom, first dances, cake cutting, and so on. The bride's and groom's suites will be available to the wedding party from 4 until the end of the evening. We'll transfer the gifts from the gift table to the newlywed's limo, as well as any flowers they want to take with them or give to others. I know it's a lot, but my partners and I will be here for all of you every step of the way. All you really have to do is enjoy and celebrate. Chapter 5. She ran the show like a velvet-voiced general, Malcolm thought, striding around in her mile-high heels and severe black suit. A lot of smiles, though, he noted, and buckets of warmth, except when she looked in his direction. He waited her out, smothered in the scent of roses that made the bouquet he carried seem a bit puny. Still, he'd wrangled it from the nose-ringed goth girl who worked with Emma, so he'd kept it all in the family. Emma breezed by him.
Mine?
Not anymore.
Still very pretty. Parker's gonna be a few more minutes.
I've got time.
Grab a drink if you want. There's plenty. Or you can wait inside.
I'm good, but thanks.
I've gotta go. If you were over at my place, you saw we're neck deep.
Wedding tomorrow?
No, actually, they had a conflict, so they rehearsed for their Friday wedding tonight. I've got an outside event tomorrow, and Parker's got a couple tours. Plus, we've got another full staff consult and a four-event weekend.
Busy girls. I'm fine here. Go ahead.
She won't be long, Emma assured him and hurried away.
When he waited another 15 minutes, he figured she took her time. But she came out again with that ground-eating stride she managed to make look both unhurried and graceful.
I'm sorry to keep you waiting, she began. If I'd known you'd planned to come by, I'd have told you we had a rehearsal.
I didn't come to see you.
She opened her mouth, closed it again.
I came by to see Mrs. Grady.
He gestured with the flowers.
To thank her again for dinner and the ham sandwich I had for lunch today.
Oh, well, she's not here.
I got that.
She went out with friends, dinner and a movie. You brought her flowers.
Coles to the place that has all the coals.
She'll love them, and she'll be sorry she missed you. I'll put them in water for her.
Okay.
But when she reached for them, he turned and started to the house. He glanced back.
Coming?
I don't want to hold you up any more than I already have, she said as she walked with him.
I've got nothing booked. You?
Actually, I was going to call you, she said, evading the question. To thank you for having my car sent out. You didn't have to go to the trouble, but I appreciate it.
We're both full of thank yous.
Apparently.
She led the way in, through the kitchen and back into the butler's pantry. He stopped, looked around.
Wow, this place just keeps on keeping on.
My family's always liked to entertain, and often in a way that takes a lot of space.
She chose a vase from a cabinet.
Del may be home if you want company.
You know, it feels like you're trying to shake me off.
Does it?
She added flower food and water to the vase.
That would be rude.
And you wouldn't be.
Oh, I can be, depending on the circumstances.
She waited a beat.
But doing me a favor, too, actually, and bringing one of my favorite people flowers aren't meriting circumstances.
I can't say I thought of kissing you as doing you a favor.
He felt the temperature drop 20 degrees.
That's not what I meant.
I bet that usually works, the freeze, he added. But me, I don't mind the cold.
I'm sure that's handy for you, and I also think you've gotten the wrong impression.
When she turned, he shifted and boxed her in.
No, I haven't.
Her eyes flashed, blue lightning cased in ice.
I don't like being maneuvered.
No, you like doing the maneuvering, and you're damn good at it. I admire that. When I was doing gags.
Gags?
Stunts. Stunt work. Anyway, back then, I liked to watch the horse wranglers if I had a chance. You've got the same kind of skill with people. It's impressive.
I'd say thank you, but we seem to have passed that phrase around plenty already.
Don't mention it.
He eased back.
I like your house. Who wouldn't, but I mean I like how it works. I like seeing and figuring out how things work.
How the house works?
House, home, business. Canvas.
She paused at that, a flower in her hand, and just stared at him.
You let people paint the picture they want on it. You guide a lot of the strokes, maybe influence them towards certain colors, but they get what they want at the end of it. It's good work.
The phone saved her from another thank you. Excuse me. Hello, Bonnie, what can I do for you? She wandered a few paces away. Malcolm heard the hysteria through the phone even before Parker yanked it an inch from her ear. I see, yes, I... He listened, why the hell not, and began to stick flowers in the vase himself. Of course I understand, but I also think you're very stressed just now, again, understandably. I bet Richie is too. Well, Bonnie, your mother isn't marrying Richie, and though I know she loves him, she doesn't know him the way you do. I think if Richie thought of it as anything other than a silly, blowing-off-steam male tradition, he'd never have told you. But he did, and the way he did tells me he thinks of it as a joke. His brother's just doing what brothers often do. She closed her eyes a moment, listened as she thumbed out a Tums. Yes, I do understand, but you're not marrying Richie's brother. I'm sure none of you really want something as unimportant as this to cause any sort of a family rift. She listened again. Yes. Mm-hmm. Does Richie love you? Mm-hmm. Has he given you any reason to doubt that? Any reason not to trust him? What I think isn't important. It's what you think and what you feel. But since you asked, I think I'd laugh it off and I'd go have a wonderful time with my friends before I spend the next week getting ready to marry the man I'm just crazy about. While she wound it up, he finished the arrangement, then stepped back, hands tucked in his back pockets to study the result. That's nicely done, Parker commented.
It's not bad. So, problem?
Nothing major.
The groom's brothers hired a stripper for the bachelor party. She projected,
Malcolm added.
Really well.
I guess she did. Yes, and the bride hit flashpoint, aided by the fury and dire warnings of her mother, who really doesn't think anyone's good enough for her baby girl, and will, I predict, always find fault with Richie.
She wanted you to back her up.
Naturally.
And you soothed and smoothed while managing to turn it back on her. Nice wrangling, Tex.
If you're mature enough to marry, you ought to be mature enough to stop crying to Mommy every time something upsets you. And if she doesn't trust her perfectly affable, devoted, and honest-to-a-fault fiancé not to jump on a stripper a week before the wedding, she shouldn't marry him.
That's not what you said to her.
Because she's the client. She caught herself. And I shouldn't be saying it to you.
Hey, what's said in the... What is this room?
Butler's pantry.
No shit?
He let out a half-laugh as he scanned the space again.
Okay, what's said in the butler's pantry stays in the butler's pantry.
That got a smile out of her, a faint one.
You calmed her down.
For now, anyway. They're moving to Atlanta. He's been transferred, in a couple months. The mother is supremely pissed over that, and it's the very best thing that could happen. They've got a good chance, I think, if she gets out from under Mommy's thumb.
It tensed you up.
She shrugged and picked up the vase. I'll get over it.
I gotta ask you something.
She glanced back at him as they walked out. What?
Do you own a pair of jeans?
Of course I own a pair of jeans.
How about a leather jacket, with or without designer label?
Your interest in my wardrobe is very strange. She set the vase on the counter, then handed Malcolm a notepad and pen. You should write her a little note so she'll see it with the flowers when she gets home.
Okay, while I'm doing that, go put on the jeans and jacket.
Excuse me?
I love the way you say that. You'll enjoy the ride more out of that suit.
I like that.